Hey everyone, if you're interested in a career in talent acquisition, then please stay tuned for this episode. Hi, I'm Kiki.
And I'm Kemi.
And you're listening to
Your Advisors Will See You Now, a podcast that will help you to figure out all of your options for life after high school.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Your Advisors Will See You Now. You're here with Kiki. Kemi's on a work trip. She couldn't be here with us today. I'm going to miss her a lot. But we are here with a special guest for our career series. So if you're new or just joining us, our career series are episodes where we interview people in various career fields, really just to give listeners a snapshot into what various careers and professions are out there. They're going to talk to you about their day-to-day, how they entered the field, skills needed. So it's really just to give people that are curious about entering into a field, or maybe you're in high school or college, still trying to figure out what your career path is going to look like. We hope that these episodes have been beneficial. If you're just joining us for the first time, then please make sure to go back and listen to other episodes. But in today's episode, we are going to be speaking with Autumn Johnson. She goes by AJ, so I'll be referring to her as AJ. But AJ is in talent acquisition. I'm going to read her bio, and then we'll get started with the interview. So Autumn AJ Johnson has 13 years experience in talent acquisition and HR, working with government, Fortune 50, tech, and media organizations. As a senior leader, her expertise covers candidate engagement, recruitment marketing, employer branding, talent intelligence, analytics, and operations. She graduated from the University of Kentucky with a Bachelor's of Science in Telecommunications, initially starting her career in media and advertising, and utilizes her current recruiting experience to influence diversity in those industries through mentorship and volunteering with organizations that supported her early career, like the NABJ, T. Howard Foundation, AAAA, Radio and Television Society. AJ also offers job seekers job search strategies via her company, ALJ Incorporated Consulting. So AJ, thank you for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
You are welcome. So AJ, so like gracious, can we reach out to this platform called Hire Black? And AJ reached out. So we're super appreciative that you are here with us today to help us learn more about talent acquisition. So if you can just give us a little bit of your background, just share what your current title is, your current role, please.
So most recently I worked as a talent acquisition training lead for an organization called Intello. And that kind of, it's within talent acquisition, but it's a little bit outside. And let me explain that. So I've been a recruiter in talent acquisition for several years. But this role with Intello allows me to train recruiters from various companies on a specific software designed to help recruiters find talent globally and be able to search them through various parameters, such as diversity, such as by their degree program, such as by their employer. Now, you might say that's what LinkedIn does. And yes and no. This software is a very AI-driven deep dive across the web to take data that people have put about themselves on at least 30 different sites, aggregate it together, and build a more comprehensive profile than what is on one site by itself. So, for example, on LinkedIn, people tend to be very professional about how they present themselves. But on another website, they might be a little looser if it's a personal site that they have. Like a few years ago, the About Me sites were really big and stuff like that. The way you describe yourself there is going to be different than on LinkedIn. But when a recruiter is recruiting, depending on what their skill sets and knowledge is about the industry or what they're looking for, they might need you to explain it to them or describe yourself in a way that's more comfortable to that specific industry versus what's more vanilla. So when you merge the two, you get a complete profile of an individual and you can see a broader look, as you say, of how they qualify for the role you're trying to fill them for. But back to my role. My role is to train people how to use the software that does that, right? Teach them how to search for the candidates. Teach them how to create reports that will help them tell the company that they're hiring for, you know, you have this initiative to bring more women into this particular job role in our city. Well, guess what? There's only this many women that have that type of degree, that have that type of skill set. So you wanted to, you know, fill 50 roles with just women or more women. It's probably not going to happen that way unless you're willing to relocate some people, willing to do some other things, or look at it long range to say, we could probably do that in 5 years. We're not going to be able to do that in 1 year. You know, okay. So stuff like that. But okay. My base experience is talent acquisition and recruiting, utilizing different tools and resources to identify great candidates within the workforce and pull them into organizations that I represent.
Okay, that's very cool. I've never heard of Intello before, but that sounds like really great. Like you said, it's different than LinkedIn because it really is pulling like all of your like different areas of your expertise and like your personality together. That sounds really cool.
I mean, the way it does it, it uses open source information off the web. So basically, you probably use the same email for your LinkedIn account, for your mm-hmm. Facebook account, for your whatever's, you know, social sites, other things you put on Instagram and things like that. You're probably using the same email address. So it starts there, you know, that mm-hmm. email account, that Gmail account that you've linked to various websites. It can say, oh, this is the same person. What do they say about themselves? What can we learn about them from these profiles? Websites like GitHub okay. and other tech sectors. Again, what does this engineer who don't typically use a lot of LinkedIn, what do they say about themselves on LinkedIn, on GitHub? Mm-hmm. Or they say about themselves on this tech base that we can pull together a profile about them so that companies that pay for our services can now find this candidate that they can't connect to on LinkedIn because the person doesn't use LinkedIn regularly. Now we can access them through our service.
Okay. No, that's really awesome. Good. And I mean, I think it just also shows like how in-depth recruiting can go. Cause a lot of times, and I know you'll get more into like what recruiting is, but I'm sure a lot of times like I come from a community college background or advising background, but at a community college, we have people like come, you know, and like they recruit that way, but it just shows like how technology is like taking, like helping to make recruiting more probably equitable too. That's really cool.
Definitely. And allows you to get to places or get to people in mm-hmm. places that you can't get to physically, either because of cost parameters, like especially during the pandemic. I'm a part of a group that talks about university recruitment and the talk, you know, are you doing on campuses this year? Are you not? How are you doing your internships? How are you doing these things remotely? How do you keep the engagement? You know, so the technology definitely helps us touch places where we couldn't get to or can't get to in certain times.
Sure.
But yeah, make it more equitable and give other people opportunities.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love it. Thank you for sharing. So just to get into like your background, can you discuss a little bit about your educational background and what led you into your career in talent acquisition?
So I went to the University of Kentucky. I initially wanted to be one of two things or two things together. I wanted to be an architect and I wanted to be what's called a technical director for television. I wanted to be a director for sports events. So like things like the Super Bowl and football games and sporting events that happen on TV. I wanted to mm-hmm. be part of the production team for that. And two things happened. At UK, the architecture college is right across the street from the communications college. So it was right across the walkway, 50 feet. So it would be really convenient to have these major, minor, you know, situation. Mm-hmm. But then I saw the architecture students working outside on a cold day, mm-hmm. building something. And I said, oh, no.
And then
And then I didn't have any spatial skills. Like I could not draw a three-dimensional image to save my life.
Okay.
So I focused on the audiovisual and the television aspect. Still ended up working outside, hauling cameras in the heat and in the weather for sporting events. So that quickly turned my attention to somewhere inside climate control. Okay. Less walking, less hauling of equipment and cables and things like that when I finished my degree. And mm-hmm. so I worked in marketing and advertising. I'm at the age right on the cusp of Gen X and millennials. Mm-hmm. So in 2008, 2009, when the economy slipped, marketing is an area of industry that typically gets the budget cuts first mm-hmm. in industry. So a lot of marketing jobs went away or were brought in-house as in reference to where I worked in that aspect. After a couple of years of being underemployed and working various jobs, I really want to understand how are people making these hiring decisions, like who's getting my resume? Are they even considering me? Mm-hmm. What's happening after my application goes through? What happens after this? And so a search firm, sometimes also called headhunters, sometimes also called agency recruiters, reached out to me about a job opportunity. I didn't get the job opportunity, but I knew to stay connected to them as future opportunities arose. Mm-hmm. But at some point, they reached out to people that were in their email pool and said, hey, we're looking for new recruiters. Would you be interested? Mm-hmm. And I said, I would like to be a recruiter. I'd like to, because I want to know what happens after somebody gets my resume. What goes on the other side of the table? So I reached out to the company and let them know I wanted to recruit. And that started my recruiting career at that point. Working in that type of space, which I said, it's like headhunting or agency recruiting. They're more transactional. And what I mean is, you don't get paid until you place somebody in a job. And basically, my role is just to find people, interview them, see if they qualify for a job that my client has, and then present the best candidates to that client in hopes that they hire them and pay me. And this still goes on today. There's hundreds of executive search agency headhunter firms that do the exact same thing day in and day out. And there are a lot of jobs with these organizations that will never appear on a job board, which is why you should connect with them. They might be on a corporate site, but they might not. Companies tend to use headhunters for various reasons, but a lot of the reasons, especially if you're more senior talent, maybe they have an executive or somebody they need to push out. They need to buy out their contract, but they need to have their replacement in the wing. They're calling a headhunter. Hey, we're getting ready to replace our chief HR officer, our chief finance officer. We're getting ready to replace Coach Prime or something like that. They had the next coach waiting, right? So they got somebody out in the world looking for the person who's going to replace them once they make the announcement that this higher up person is going to leave. Sometimes these firms just need somebody contractually. You know, a company says, we got this big project rolling out in a year. I need, you know, somebody who can do the work, but, you know, we don't need them full time. We just need them to work the year under a contract basis for these, you know, this money and this. But they need to have these skill sets. So they'll use a headhunter for that. So that was the space that I worked in initially. Find somebody for a company that needs this specific talent, place them, and then keep it moving. Go to the next job. But then I moved into corporate recruiting, where I work for one company and I'm filling in-house positions. So I'm filling the IT manager, the accountant, the production team, whatever types of roles, all for the one same company. It's a different pay model, and you have a lot more in that space bureaucracy to deal with, because you have to talk to the hiring manager and know, you know, they have a job description, but sometimes there are things they don't tell you that they're looking for in a person or in their skill set. So you have to know the hiring manager. And even though I know what skills they have, I also have to look out for somebody who, you know, would work well with this person. I have more connection to the organization, how well the fit's going to be. So I have other things nuances I have to look at for candidates. In that space, in a corporate space, you typically have more resources. And what I mean, that technology, like I was talking about with Intello, they buy the LinkedIn recruiter tools to use. They buy Intello and other softwares like that to use. They send you to job fairs, you know, a headhunter and things. They're typically not going to go to a big job fair in the city, but a corporate hiring team, they're going to send one or two people to the citywide job fair. They're going to set up their own job fairs. They're going to do the campus recruitment and stuff like that. So they have the resources and the budget to send their recruiters out more. Other things that we do. Then we have a lot more paperwork. It's just flat out that we have to do. Depending on how the recruiting team is set up, I might do everything from post the job, find the candidate, you know, maneuver them through however many interviews it takes. Then on the back end, get all their new hire paperwork, take their IDs, send them to get a drug test, send them to get this. Do everything before they're finally a new employee. Other companies, I might have to do less. Some I might even have to do orientation. It just depends. So when you're in a corporate setting versus the, what we call the external recruiter, the headhunters, the agency, there's a lot more paperwork or bureaucracy involved. There's a lot more strategy and long-term planning. And there's a lot more resources sometimes that you have access to in order to find people for a company.
Okay, that's really awesome. Like, thank you for really breaking it down. Because I feel like I've heard the term headhunter before, but never really understood. I think I've worked probably more with like corporate recruiters. So I guess, I'm not sure, you know, I don't want to assume for our audience, but can you take us through like a corporate recruiter, like what that process looks like? Like once somebody applies to a job, can you just walk us through like what that pathway looks like for the corporate recruiter to, you know, like you said, maneuver the, the applicant through?
Let's start, I guess, at the true beginning. Like there needs to be an opening in a company. Either they've developed a new job or somebody quit and they need to replace this person. And the phrase we use in-house is backfill. You know, are we going to backfill Jimmy John leaving the company to go somewhere else? If their manager says, yeah, we need to fill this role, then the recruiter can pull Bill's Jimmy John's job description from a file and we say, is this still the same job? Like, do we need to make changes? Like, did Jimmy John do this job for 5 years and now everything in this job description is obsolete or changed? His role changed. We need to make those changes and corrections to what the skill sets are. And we work with the HR manager sometimes to do that. But we update the job description and then we post it on the internet, our company website, your Indeed, your LinkedIn, your CareerBuilder, whatever sites we feel that will pull the best talent for us, we'll do that. If for some reason nobody's applying to the job, I try to figure out why. I'm like, I only have this job has been up a week. I only have 10 applicants. Something's wrong. And sometimes it's not something's wrong. It may be a very specific type of job. You know, maybe there are not many people in the location where we're hiring that does this work. Maybe the job title isn't the right thing. It doesn't connect to people. A lot of companies make up job titles that people don't know what they are, you know. So, for example, in the HR space now, there's a job title called people relations, people associate, people, you know, that's technically HR. Like, and so, and it's usually used more in the tech space. You know, you don't have a people relations associate at a big firm that's been around 100 years like Chase, a bank or something. But they use it, you know, more in the tech space. So he's like, that's HR. You know, read the job description. That's the HR role. So if I put the wrong job title out there, the wrong people, you know, the right people don't see it or they don't know that it's what I really need. So that might be the problem. Or again, but if the problem is something like we don't have enough talent in our wherever, you know, like say the job is for Alaska. There's not a lot of people in Alaska. if it's something like that, then we have to say, okay, you know, then are we relocating somebody? Then I need to start looking in other states for people that might want to relocate to Alaska for this job if we can't make it remote. Or I need to look at Alaska, look at our competitors, other companies, people that might have a similar skill set in that space. And then I have to do what's called active sourcing or active recruiting. So when somebody sees a job on CareerBuilder and they apply, that's what we call a passive applicant or active applicant rather. That means you are actively looking for a job and you actively applied and I don't have to do nothing as a recruiter to get you. You saw it, you applied. But when I don't have enough applicants, I have to go for the passive people. These are people that might not be looking for a job at all. Maybe they look every once in a while. Maybe, you know, they're just, you know, or maybe it's just whatever. I have to talk to them now directly. I can't wait for them to find the job or see the job. I have to find them. Find some type of contact method, whether it's on LinkedIn, their phone number, an email address, some way to get them attracted to this opportunity and tell them about it and then see if they're fit and, you know, start getting them through the process as well. So those are the type of things that happens after, you know, once a job is posted, do I get a lot of applicants and make my life easy sometimes? Or do I have to start actively looking for people to fill this role because it's very niche? There's not enough people in the market, you know, wherever it's located, that do it, you know, whatever the challenges might have. Once I have my applicants or enough applicants, you know, and I go through, I talk and I do an interview with them. I'm just interviewing. And so this is important to learn. A recruiter is really just trying to see how close you match the job and the skills that they've set forth. They're not typically, in my interviews, I'm not typically going to get really in-depth about your day-to-day work and stuff like that. I want to know, you know, how long you've been doing it. You know, have you received any type of accolades for doing it? Why do you like doing it? You know, and why are you interested in my role? You know, the next interview stage with hiring managers, people you work with, that's when they really get in depth and ask you the questions about day-to-day stuff, how you handle certain situations, things like that. So that's really something important for people to understand. As you go through an interview process, you're going to communicate with each stage of the each person you interview and where they sit in the decision-making chain differently. With the recruiter, it's more of an introductory call. We're getting to the basics. We're seeing if there's an initial fit. With people you're going to work with, they want to see what you know. Will you be effective in that space for them? What, you know, are you the person that's going to come in and help, you know, help spread work around, be able to do everything sufficiently and things like that? And then even if you have, you know, more interviews, like if you're talking to a leader about a role, and especially if you are a leader interviewing for a leadership role, they want to hear more about, you know, your successes. They want to learn, you know, more about your strategy and things like that. They want to hear more about you being a change agent, you being, you know, what your philosophies are about business, about issues in the sector and stuff like that. So you're not trying to convince somebody you can do the job. You're now talking about why you are successful and stuff like that. So you approach each of those interviews kind of differently. But once somebody successfully goes through an interview process, and my role as recruiter, you know, again, it depends on how a team is set up. Sometimes there are more junior recruiters that'll help schedule interviews and appointments and make certain things so I can go back to focusing on either finding talent or doing some other process in the system. But if I'm handling everything as the person, they're ready to make a hire, I initiate the offer. So that's the stage where the manager says, hey, I want to hire this person. This is the comp range, if we haven't already discussed it before. And I take people through the negotiation process. So I say, hey, I want to offer you 100K, and they can come back, ask what they want, this, that, whatever. In some companies, I can approve certain things at a certain level. So if they don't want, if they ask me for 110,000 and they want, you know, an extra week of PTO and this, whatever, sometimes I have the authority to approve it. If I don't, I have to go back to managers, lay out what they want. They might come back with a counter, you know. So the negotiation process starts. Once everybody's in agreement about what the total rewards package and compensation is going to be, then I do and take the candidate or the new hire now through the onboarding process. And that can vary by company. It could be a drug screen, background check, reference checks. If it's a physical job, a whole pre-hire physical, we send them to a clinic, we pay for it. They get the whole blood pressure check, everything like that. There could be some other pre-assessments to be done before the hire, the final hires maybe. Yeah, so I'll walk them through those steps and get all of that information aggregated. We pick a start date, and then we're just waiting for the person to start. And once they're hired, they're no longer my problem, and I go back to the drawing board to find more people. So that's a typical life cycle of getting somebody through the hiring process.
Sure, and that sounds super extensive. So my question after you've mentioned that, so are you having to like multitask multiple job openings, like, or are you doing one at a time?
Job openings, multiple job openings, multiple people for the same job. You know, typically when I'm working in-house, I'll send at least three people at a time through an interview process. Like this isn't a one at a time thing would take longer. You see it on LinkedIn all the time. You know, why is it taking so long for this interview process? Is that whatever? Things like that. So I might, for that same job, I've got, you know, somebody's interviewing Tuesday, somebody's interviewing Tuesday afternoon, somebody's interviewing Wednesday. Then I have to go back and find somebody, you know, talk to the people for this other job that I have to fill. And, you know, maybe I don't have enough candidates for that. So I'm actually actively looking for those people where it was easy for one job. People were applying all day and I had a bunch of people to pick from. Now I have to actively find people and they're not answering their emails. They won't reply to my phone calls. You know, I have to take the meetings with the managers when that happens. Hey, I can't find enough people for you. It's going to be another week. Let's keep rolling. Other times I have to call the managers. I need time on your calendar. You have five candidates waiting to be interviewed. Like, what are you doing?
Right. What are you doing?
I need you to step it up. Who's on vacation? Who can fill in? What can we do about this? You know, hey, this person failed the background check, so you got to pick your number two person. We have those conversations, you know, so yeah, there's a lot of multitasking things going on while people are being interviewed that you juggle.
Okay, wow. So you kind of already mentioned like some of the skills, and like the number one thing I'm hearing is being a self-starter. It sounds like you have to be like very independent. Like it sounds like there's a team aspect, but you have to be very independent to manage your day-to-day and manage like multiple projects or multiple openings as well. And so I guess I would ask, like, besides being like a self-starter and being able to juggle multiple projects at one time, like what are some other skills you would say are needed for a recruiting position or career?
One of the skills I think is really valuable is obviously not being afraid to talk to people. You know, a lot of salespeople kind of venture into recruiting and vice versa. But yeah, definitely being able to talk to people, because I'm going to have interviews all day long. I'm going to be talking to somebody at some stage of the party that I'm trying to convince them to get into the interview process, consider the job, or they are currently interviewing and I'm, you know, doing my screen with them, seeing if they are a good fit. I'm talking to the managers about the people they've interviewed and who do you still want to go forward. Are we rejecting? That's another thing. I typically have to reject everybody that's getting rejected. Sure. The managers. For one company that I work for, if there were internal candidates, so, you know, somebody in the department down the hall applied, the managers would do it so that they could develop a plan to kind of develop and grow the person. But everybody else who didn't get as far along the interview process, I have to call and, you know, give that, you know, give that feedback that we're moving forward with another candidate. So you have to have a tough skin in that aspect, because, you know, looking for a job is serious business. And yes, you know, some people respond well to the rejection, they take it all in stride, others don't. What other skill set is good? So I come from a marketing background, as I mentioned earlier, that had been kind of my earlier career. And marketing is really valuable because, again, I am trying to present an opportunity to people and I need them to take my call to action and move on it. You know, hey, apply today, you know, or call me back. I saw your profile and I think you'd be a great fit. You have these skill sets. Come talk to me about this job. You know, it's going to be a great, would be great next step for you, things like that. And I'm selling an opportunity and I'm marketing it to people, marketing my company through employer brand techniques and things like that. So my marketing skills definitely come into play in this role. And then just good people relations, you know, again, being able to talk to people and communicate and understand, you know, multiple sides. You know, there are things about the work that frustrates me sometimes when I'm dealing with my colleagues, those managers that are taking all day to make decisions about things and stuff. And then also dealing with the candidates that are really eager to, you know, state their case and their qualifications, to, you know, more senior corporate people that want to know, why is it taking so long? Why is this? What are we doing about this? So being able to navigate all those different relationships and communicate well with whomever I'm interacting with is very valuable as well.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Those are great. And what kind of segue, because you mentioned some of your frustrations. So what would you say are some of the challenges or additional challenges? And then what are some of the highlights of your career?
Challenges. Like I said, the hiring managers, you know, they typically dictate the interview process. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I definitely get on the front end, very straightforward about how many interviews are my candidates going to, you know, your candidates, but the candidates going to go through, who are they interviewing with? That's even stuff that I ask in my own job search. I'm not going to just let somebody say, well, we'll call you in a week and we'll schedule you for interviews. No, how is this going to go? So I know how much time I'm going to have invested. You know, is it going to be a month long process and things like that? So those are the things I get up on the front end. And sometimes those processes are either, you know, too long in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Or again, if I work internally and I have relationships and whatnot with certain people, there are certain people I've already, you know, I know that I don't want to work with that don't take the process seriously, but take it too seriously and don't, and, you know, are hemming up the process or I know they're busy with other things. And I was like, why do they have to be a part of it? And their calendar is, you know, they only have a half hour block every other day available.
Right.
They hold up the process. I've been through that and it just frustrated me. But they had to be the first person people talked to because they knew what type of environment the candidate would walk into in the role. So they were valuable, but it was frustrating.
Right.
Those are things that I deal with. Looking at candidates and people that are job seeking, you know, there's no trick to anything. There's no magic bullet. There's no dodging or tricking the ATS. There's a whole bunch of theories and philosophies and what do they call them? Urban legends out there about how the job search process works. And so when you sometimes see candidates doing certain things with their resumes or doing something, it's just like, oh goodness, here's another one. And, you know, you just feel for them because, like, if they've applied this way or if they've done this on our, you know, for our application, imagine where else they're doing the same thing. And I can't reject everybody and coach them through. But those are some of the frustrations, too, is when you see a profile or a resume that just doesn't optimize what their skill sets are. You know, it is frustrating because, you know, that this person has the skills, they have a background or experience that could possibly take them somewhere, but they don't know how to express it or convey it in writing. Mm-hmm. And you hope they get an opportunity to. And again, sometimes I can open that up as the recruiter.
Okay.
And that's, I guess you said that'd be one of the positives of it is that I can curate who the hiring managers see, because they're not going to see all 100, all 200 people that apply. They're going to see 5 to 7.
Right.
I'm going to whittle it down to about 10 or 15. And a couple of those aren't going to return my call. They've changed their mind. They're doing something else. They're busy. And I'm going to get 5 to 7. And that's who they're going to interview.
Right. Right.
Another positive, you know, again, always is, you know, when the new person gets the role and, you know, they're joining the company, it's always great. You know, people are excited. You know, especially if it's a, you know, great career move, allows them to move geographically, allows them to make more money, allows them to finally get into the job or space that they've been interested in, you know, that you learn about as you interview them. It's always great to finally close that requisition for hire and go back to the next job and things like that. So those are some of the challenges and the positives of being.
I love that. So I think you did mention this, but if there is somebody that you think maybe like has potential, you're able to, or you've kind of, I'm sure, like pick and choose, but you're able to maybe guide them to like how they can improve their resume or how they can make themselves stand out more. Do you find yourself doing that pretty often?
Okay. Yeah. you know, if especially if it's a candidate that I have presented to for an interview, and maybe they did get the interview, but they're not going to the next step, then once I have to call and reject them, I say to them, you know, possibly change this on your resume, you know, speak about this. You really, if you emphasize these skill sets and things like this, I think, and you start, you know, reapply for some other roles, this will probably help you as you continue your job search and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely get an opportunity to kind of coach back a little bit when I'm having to take that negative step. And it helps to soften the blow a little
bit. Right, right. And again, I was going to say that.
Mm-hmm. And again, like I stated, if they knew that, if they knew, they probably don't know, but they knew that I went through 200 applicants and picked them to get interview, you're really ahead. You really are ahead.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I was going to say, I feel that's a great like trait that you do incorporate, you know, here's some coaching as well, because like you said, it softens the blow, because I'm sure anyone listening, all of us have been rejected before by a job, but to have somebody say, this is what you can improve for next time or another company, that's really encouraging to them, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I have two questions about like advice. So my first question would be, if there's someone interested in becoming a recruiter or entering the field of talent acquisition, what's your advice for them, like either entering the field or just advice to get that started?
Right. So there's definitely no talent acquisition degree program or anything like that. Talent acquisition is considered a subset of HR. It's something that you would study if you are getting that type of degree, and some general business degrees as well. So most people do typically come from an HR background or HR degree program, but that's not necessary. My degree is in telecommunications. Remember, I worked carrying cameras through sporting events in the sun and the snow and the rain, and then I got an office job in marketing and advertising and got in so let me talk about me getting in. So the reason I went through that headhunter, remember, they initially called me to offer me a marketing job, but then I said, let me be a part of your team. And we recruited for, and that company recruited for marketing people. So because I knew the industry from working in it, I was a valuable resource. And that's how some people get into recruitment. If you're a career changer, and then if you worked in a certain field, that can help you. If you find an agency that works and hires within your field, maybe somebody who tried to recruit you like they did me, you have a resource. You have a network of people you've worked with in the industry and have been attached to different employers in the industry. That'll be a valuable piece for you. And you can learn the recruiting aspects. So that happens for a lot of people. There are firms that target people. Robert Half, and there's a couple others, you know, if they have a legal division, they will hire lawyers. They're like, hey, don't work 80-hour weeks for billable hours anymore. Work 50 hours a week for us on commission and make almost the same money. But, you know, you get more time to yourself, and they want your network. They want the law firms and the things that you've been connected to be able to find talent. So they definitely do that scene for legal recruiters, accounting recruiters. Even in the tech space, some of them will pull tech people that, you know, like, I don't want to code anymore. Well, you know, let's connect with all the people that you've networked with working. So that's one way if you're a career changer. If you're coming in straight out of school, there are a lot of HR internships and or rotational programs that take you through the different segments of HR, which include like payroll and benefits and compensation and learning and development, recruiting, a couple others I can't think of off the top of my head right now. So they'll take you through those. But so that's more of the student level. If you're not a student, maybe you're coming out of high school, or even if you are a college student, two other ways to get in are working with staffing firms, you know, big names that you know, like Kelly's and Randstad and Adecco and things like that. Adecco used to have a big training program in Atlanta, I believe it was. But working in a local staffing office, you know, the ones you've seen down the street from, you know, large corporations, that's where they like to put their offices, is near the big office spaces or near the big plants and warehouses so that they can be convenient for those employers. That's a way to segue into the business. In that space, you're typically hiring people as temporaries for the most part, but they do some direct hire for companies, or they do long-term contracts. So it's like, there's a lot of manufacturers, they'll hire people through a temp service and let the people work for 90 days, and then they'll bring them on full time. So that's a way to segue into the business as well. And like I said, in more of the agency space again, it is kind of sales oriented. So even salespeople, if you have a sales degree or a business degree, there's other firms that work that are more sales recruiting oriented. So companies like, there's a big one that just slipped my head. Aston Carter and a couple other firms, you know, those, they look for account managers. And so the account managers have to bring in new clients and business, and then they have to fill the jobs the clients give them. So it's a mixture. But like I said, on the corporate level, there's HR internships, recruiting internships and programs, and then that can lead you to, you know, entry level roles and build your career from there. So there's several ways to enter the industry.
Sure. What, well, you mentioned briefly, like, a business degree can be helpful in this field. I know a lot of colleges probably don't offer like a straight talent acquisition or HR degree. What would you say are some valuable degrees to prepare somebody for a recruiting position?
Yeah, that's definitely, like, nobody has a TA program. It's usually encompassed in either business or HR.
Right.
Communications, which is my, you know, audiovisual. Communications in general, public speaking, like I said, and marketing, which would go along with sales and things like that. I mean, even psychology. I mean, like I said, any degree. Look, there's people that have a number of degrees I've met, you know, professionally that, you know, there's no talent acquisition recruiting degree. So we all come, we all begin as something else, as they like to say. So really any degree, let's say this is, so then again, to getting the skill sets though, there's multiple ways you can do a you can do certifications that now there are a myriad of certifications out there that you can do to get some training. I have two certifications from an organization called AIRS. So when I became a recruiter, you know, I was learning, I'm just gonna be honest, I was learning from YouTube University. There were,
I love it. It's
influencers,
free.
Yeah, influencers in the recruiting space that I followed, and I was taking tips off them. And my company gave me some training as well. But that's how I, you know, I started learning some things. And I said, well, let me get this certification. I heard about this certification. I said, let me get this because I feel like, you know, I'm doing the YouTube thing, but like, is what they told me on YouTube legit? I heard it on YouTube, but there's a certification for it. Let me try this. So I got I have a certification from an organization called AIRS. I forgot what it stands for, AIRS, and I'm a certified internet recruiter, which means I can use the internet to source people and find people using a specific software language called Boolean, and people probably heard that, might have heard that before and things like that. So I took a 2-day class, and then I took a test, and I passed it by the hair on my chinny chin chin, but I did pass, and so I have a certification in that, as well as another certification called a professional recruiting certification. That one was easy peasy. Like, I felt like anybody who'd been a recruiter for at least a year could have passed that test. I didn't need to pay for it. But so that was an easy one. So there are certifications out there that you can get from various organizations. There's even an organization of Association of Talent Acquisition Professionals, ATAP, that's been around officially the last 5 years or so. And so I've participated in that. I have participated in the HR organization that most people know as a SHARM. So I do, they do some talent acquisition stuff, but, you know, most, there's not enough ATAP local affiliates. So I'll participate in SHARM events, you know, just because it's related. And some of the things, I'm also been a part of an organization that's been in development over the last 4 years or so called Black in HR, which is getting us Black professionals within the space connected and networked and helping to share job opportunities and growth and training and things like that. They offer workshops and different certifications that people can take as well. So, you know, none of the certifications though are like what I would say, like industry, like really industry like requirements.
Sure.
But if you're trying to change careers, if you're trying to get into the job space and into that type of role, they're very helpful in teaching you, you know, like what skill sets are needed for what I do day to day. And especially if you're interviewing for a job, once you learn the language, you understand what the steps are in the business and process and stuff that you can learn from taking these trainings, it'll help you be more convincing as a candidate that you could handle this work. So while, you know, they're not like, you know, like for computer programmers, they have to have the C++ or this, that, whatever certification. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have an AIRS certification. Like, it might appear in some job descriptions, but you don't have to have it. You don't have to have a Black in HR certification. But again, the knowledge you learn by doing the process to be able to apply it once you're in the space, or if even myself, I've taken some, you know, I've been in the field this long, but like I've never done formal like employee relations stuff. I've done it, but I haven't done it on a level that a person that does it every day does it. So I take a class or a workshop for it, and now I can add that to my resume, but I also know exactly what to do the next time. Hey, I have to deal with somebody who's being sexually harassed or felt they're discriminated or this, that, whatever. I can aid in that. So again, they'll be very helpful in helping you make that transition in your mind and conversationally when you talk to people about the jobs.
Mm-hmm. And that's great advice you gave, because it sounds that, you know, because there is no straightforward degree, that it's really just about the continuing education. You know, like you've mentioned to internships, and I think you mentioned shadowing people too, or just like trying to insert yourself into the field, if to see, especially for our listeners that may be in college or high school, and they just want to learn more about it, just connecting yourself with people that are already in the field. But also, like, once you get in, it's all about the continuing education. And if you can get certifications, that sounds great, but not necessary, but just learning from other people as well to make sure you're like up to date on the newest trends and things like that, I'm sure.
Yeah, because there are also, like I said, professional groups. So there are conferences that go on across the year. Every year since, I guess they started maybe 2012, 2013 or so, LinkedIn has had a conference, Talent Connect. So that's recruiters from all over the world meeting at a site and, you know, learning the latest in recruiting. There's other organizations called SourceCon that, again, refers back to finding the talent and attracting them to the role. Black and HR is planning a conference, hopefully for next year, their first national conference, but they'll show up as a group at SHRM and other events. So there are other in-person, larger scale training events in the, that you can associate with as well, again, for that continued training and networking and building your community industry.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like it's vital. Just the conferences are always so important, just to connect with other people. And I know they're great for training and learning purposes too.
Yes.
So my last question really, and this is, you can give as much as you want, as little as you want, because this is free advice. I know you have this is your job, but if there's someone that's listening and they like are applying to jobs and, you know, applying, or maybe it's been rough, or they just need some advice, like what's your advice? I know this is like a very broad question, but what's your advice to someone applying to a job, like how to stand out in their application?
Again, there's no trick. There's no magic bullet or pill. Right. Like you have to be willing to try a little bit of everything. So some great things, you know, even though you may have applied through the website, try to find on LinkedIn the individual that you would be reporting to in a job. You know, if you apply for a job at LinkedIn, and you are a marketing coordinator, you want to be a marketing person, you know, try to find a marketing manager on there and connect with them, and, you know, try to send them a message. Now, you can't be straightforward and say, hey, I applied for the job and this, that, whatever, you know, tell me when I get my application, but, you know, definitely get them in your network and send them a message, you know, just asking to connect to their network. When LinkedIn first started, back in the day, you had to have somebody's email address in order to connect to people. Now you can ask and just send them a note. But when it first started, you had to have their email address to try to connect with them. And the way I built my network was, anytime I got a job in my email, just anybody saw my resume on CareerBuilder or wherever and was like, hey, would you be interested in this job? I'd then go to LinkedIn, put in that email address that it came from and say, hey, thank you for inviting me about this job. It's not going to be the right fit, but I would like to connect with you. Or if it is going to be, yeah, I mentioned this job, let me connect, you know, and that's how I was able to build up my network. But now you just have to, you know, you want to offer something before you ask for something when you try to connect with people on LinkedIn. But definitely it helps to send a message to the person who should probably be your hiring manager if you can figure that out. Another thing that will help in the job search, and again, utilizing LinkedIn, is to not depend on the quick apply feature.
Yes.
Not depend on, and not really depend wholly on looking for a job through their jobs page, because we have to pay for those. Corporations have to pay for them.
Okay.
And there are a lot of companies that are smaller companies, mid-sized companies, independent companies, things like that, that are not paying to post their jobs on LinkedIn. But there are a lot of people posting them in their posts. So if you learn to use the search bar on LinkedIn and type in the type of job you're looking for, put it in quotes, put in a location, you know, so like you could put in quotations, put marketing coordinator and then put Seattle, and you'll start to see posts and you can sort them by how the most recent one. And you'll start to see stuff that starts to match that. Some of that might be them selling, marketing, something. But you might see a company or a person that does not have an official job on the LinkedIn jobs page, but they're sharing their job with their network. And you're not in it. You can't be connected to everybody on LinkedIn. But because you did that search, you now see this person whose company is just down the street, but maybe you never heard of it or you didn't think about it. You're following the big brands and the big name. You know, everybody's chasing Facebook and Google and stuff, but there are hundreds of companies out here that are hiring and need those type of job titles. So now you see people in positions and things that aren't being fed to you by the algorithm. That's the other thing. Mm-hmm. Leave the algorithm alone. Look, it is only feeding you what you feed it back. It's regurgitating back to you what you put in. But if you need to see it, you need to see a broader spectrum of opportunities. So use the search bar on LinkedIn more often than you just watch what's being brought to you in your feed. Even if these are people you've connected with, again, it's pushing the influencers, it's pushing this, and you're missing out on a whole lot. I have discovered so many opportunities by daily using that search feature, putting in something, a search term or something that I'm looking for, and just finding events to go to, people I should be connected to, job opportunities, candidates I should be reaching out to, that again, I'm not connected to, because you can't connect everybody. And so that's a great resource. Even like my LinkedIn has changed. Again, I started in marketing and advertising. I was connected to a lot of marketing and advertising people. Now, most of the people I'm connected to are in the recruiting space. One day I saw an article, again, I looked through this article about something in finance, you know, big finance, like those big New York brokerage firms. And I clicked on it and I clicked on some names that were highlighted. And I ended up looking at pages of people that I am not connected to, but are in big name industries, big name this. I was like, wow, I have no connection to these people, but they're here talking about their line of business, their line of work and stuff. And it just, you know, they could be a resource untapped, because again, this is not what's being fed to me every day.
Right, right.
So definitely, you know, utilize that. There are a lot of minority-focused and diversity-focused projects and programs and internships and stuff. And definitely reach out to those, because they will offer certain perks that, you know, as minorities, as women, as this is that, we want to feel safe and included. But please, please do not neglect the mainstream resources. Just because they have a diversity segment doesn't mean you shouldn't apply for the mainstream one too. They still need to see our applications, our entry things there, so that they know, hey, you, the 10 spots you're saving for this minority internship, you're going to need to blow it up to 30.
Right.
Or you just have to open it, because we are still out here. This is not enough little room that you're giving us. Look for the mainstream opportunities. Apply for those as well. Don't just wait for the diversity portion. Apply now. There's an, as you read in my intro, I volunteer with several organizations. And so there's one that's come that has their application windows open. If you're in marketing and advertising, because again, I like to give back to the industries I came out of. There's an organization called the 4A's, which is the American Advertising Association. Forgot what all the A's mean. They have an internship that starts in the summer. It's called MAIP, M-A-I-P, and the application is open now. If you go to the website, I think it's MAIP.org or either the 4As.org, you can apply now through the first week of January. So taking applications for students, I do, I'm typically on the review end. So basically, I'll get a 4 or 5 students. I interview them. I look at their portfolios. I pick who gets to the next round to go to internships for ad agencies in New York and L.A. and California and Dallas and stuff. And again, there's other internships at these companies, but these are the ones that are dedicated to minorities, but still apply for the mainstream internship. But that said, what was the point I was getting to that? there was a point I was going to make about that, aside from that. But you can get in on that window. Oh, what was I going to say? I lost my train of thought.
No, it's okay. That was really good. No, take your time, honestly, because I want you to say it. But that was good.
Yeah, if it comes back, I'll email you about it.
Yeah, that's fine.
But definitely this. So the window's open now to the 1st of January. And then in January, we started. One of the things I noticed, though, they've done that the last couple of years, is that the application window is over Christmas break, which is fine. But again, internships, the mainstream applications, we start interviewing, companies start interviewing in the fall for summer.
Okay.
So I feel like, again, for them pushing this internship application this far into this, starting in the spring, is that they're only, you know, they're going to fill it. They're going to fill it. But again, there should still be students applying to the mainstream side of the application internships mm-hmm. as well, and not just be like, well, this is where all the minority is going to come from. No, you need to be picking some outside of this space as well. But there was another point I was going to make, and I lost it. Other job seeker tips. You know, LinkedIn is not the only resource in the world. Again, there's various other sites. Like I said, not all companies pay the exorbitant fees that LinkedIn is charging us now. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's the challenge now. As a job seeker, you need to know the companies are paying a lot of money. And when it gets too much, we stop paying the money. And where do we post our jobs? On our job pages. So, like I said, even though you like that quick apply, it's easy. Mm. You might need to go to our job page because we can't afford to put every job on there. Like, you might not. We put the most important. We'll put something.
Right.
You need to go back to our website. I'm sorry. You just have to. It's getting crazy out here. It costs too much. You know, coming out of school, definitely utilize the internship programs. The organizations, like I said, if you're in advertising, like the 4As, if you're in journalism, like NABJ, mm-hmm. get your student memberships and follow the organization because it can help you continue to stay networked professionally as you grow your career. Mm-hmm,
definitely.
Your Black accountants, engineers, but again, don't neglect the mainstream ones because they're looking for Black people, but they don't know how to look for Black people or this kind mm-hmm. of thing. So you got to be there. Excuse me. You got to go to NABJ. And Black accountants, like you go to National Society of Engineers, like you go to, you got to go to the white ones or the mainstream ones and ours. Mm-hmm. They need to see us there. They need to see us there. We can't just stay sequestered in our spaces. We have our safe spaces. Mm-hmm. It's safe, but we can come out and so we can attack the world.
Right. Absolutely.
And just try to remain as positive as possible as you can in your job search. Remember I said, if I have 200 applicants, and you got to talk to me, even if you got to talk to me, you are ahead of about 90% of the people who apply. Mm-hmm, if you mm-hmm. talk to the hiring manager, you're ahead of 95% of the people who applied. If you go through the whole interview process, you are the 1%.
Mm-hmm.
So keep that in mind. You think they're wasting your time? You know, it's Christmas time. Maybe they're on vacation. Maybe they're doing that. You know, you kind of have to have a purview. Sometimes they are. I ain't gonna say some people don't, but if you are getting to talk to people, you are so far of everybody who applied.
Mm-hmm. No, that's good. This is good to put in perspective. I have one more question. I'm just curious. Job postings that don't list salary, are those like valuable still, or what are your thoughts on those?
Yep. Because there's usually been money, especially if they're more senior level, there's usually mm-hmm. money behind them.
Okay.
The states like I think New York and California have. I don't know about Denver. Colorado was the big one too and stuff. But I know New York has. I'm not sure about California. But early on when I talked about my career was as a headhunter and stuff, like I said, mm-hmm. those are usually the jobs. Either they want to hide that they're looking for somebody who currently works there.
Okay,
or they
got
just,
you.
Or they just don't want, they only want it, they want you to go find a specific person. Like I've had companies tell me, we really want to pull people out of this company, you know, but we don't want them to know that we're doing it. So we go to Google and steal them. We go to Facebook and talk to people and stuff like that. But so there's usually money behind them, especially if they're posted by a headhunter firm. Like mm-hmm. this is like, oh, this is a company called this. I've never heard of them before. Talk to them, apply, because there's usually money behind. And the headhunters aren't required to post salary because they're not your employer. Only employers, except for now, New York had, I think New York wrote it in, but up until New York added it to their policy, only whoever's your final employer has to have it on their job pages and it's posted. But the headhunters and the staffing firms can get away with it. So if the compensation is not posted, and it's, again, especially if you're in an industry in a field where you know it could pay well, there's probably good money behind it. Reach out to that job. Now, the recruiters now, we will talk about it. We'll get you a range, but we don't want to post it because we don't want everybody. But still, there's typically some money behind it. And then if it's a state where it's not required, then they just don't want to. But a recruiter will typically give you a range for the most part on the phone. The industry is kind of in agreement in that aspect. If you know, corporately, they don't want it posted, we won't post it, but we will talk about it to qualify candidates. We will talk. Like I said, if we call you, then we'll talk about it. We want to talk to you. We picked your resume out the start. So we're ready to talk about it. But yeah, even if it's not posted, go ahead and apply.
Okay. That's good. No, that's good advice. Because I know I've just seen like in different spaces, a lot of people will pass up on a job because the salary is not posted.
And that's the challenge. And that's the challenge, you know, that I see in the workforce and people looking for jobs is, hopefully you'd hope if at least they've been in their industry or something like that 5 or 10 years, they know what the range should be about for their role, you know, especially now for communicating with each other about what we're making, what we're seeing and stuff. And so, but sometimes you can get tripped up by organization, you know, like you see it's a big, you know, company where you live, you know, it might be a big company where you live, but it's not global. So don't have the same pay scale or breadth of business to make the revenue to pay whatever. And then maybe you live in a small market, so they're not going to pay you what they pay in Atlanta. Not going to pay you Atlanta or New York money for living in backwater Texas or something like that. So you have to keep that in mind. Like, you know, I know people's like, well, my company let me take my salary with me. You're the exception, not the rule.
Right. You have to
modify it by market. That's something you have to think about. There are exceptions out there. But yeah, so, you know, don't be surprised. And then again, if we called you and wanted to talk to you, we didn't purposely, like, we don't know what you make. So when we say what the compensation range is and people fuss about, that's only 5% more than what I make. We don't know what you make.
Right. Exactly.
You asking us about our job. This is what we're going to pay. This is what we can pay. And, you know, in companies I've been in, I'll straight tell people we don't have it. When I work for a media company, you know, great media company, but it's only a national company.
Okay.
So we're not international. We ain't bringing the global bucks in and stuff like that. And so I'll tell people if they've applied from a certain, I can look at the company they come from. I can, you know, I kind of know. So I'll tell people, or they'll talk to me and they've been talking to other companies. Like, media ain't got it. This company ain't got it. I said, let me tell you how much I'm going to give you the rain. And we ain't got it.
Right. It's up to you from there.
But they ain't never gonna touch that.
Right.
You know, like for example, I work for a Scripps, which is a broadcast company based out of Cincinnati. Now, 15 years ago, they used to be Scripps Networks that had HGTV and Food Network and stuff, but they divested different components. And now they're just, a local broadcast and they have that spelling bee and stuff like that.
Yes.
If somebody's choosing between Scripps, which is headquartered in Cincinnati, and Procter & Gamble, which is headquartered in Cincinnati, I'm like, get that Procter & Gamble money.
Right.
That vanilla sugar scrub that I'm like, you know, because we can't compete with them.
Right.
We're in the same city. Corporate headquarters is a mile or two away. You know, great people working at BuffCom, but we can't touch what they got on almost no level.
Right.
The CEO of Scripps does not make what the CEO of Procter & Gamble makes.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And as an applicant, you have the power. You can say no. If it's not what you want to do, if it's not meeting your standards, All you can say is no. It's okay.
Right. So they both have accounting teams, but the accountants is saying make him with the Procter & Gamble accountants.
Right. No doubt. Well, AJ, thank you so much for your time, your expertise. This was really, really informative. Even just to break down, like, that talent acquisition is different, like, is a subset of HR. But I think this was really valuable for anyone that's interested in, if anyone listening, like, you know what your skills are. If it fits into this, you may want to consider talent acquisition. Sounds like a really, really cool field. And I'm sure it's growing because there's so many new fields and
Definitely a lot of growth over the pandemic. Unfortunately, the last year. So there have been quite a bit layoffs in the talent acquisition space.
Yeah. Yeah.
You definitely want to tread carefully if you're thinking about moving into the space for a future opportunity. But we're hoping to see a turnaround in 2024. So.
Okay. Awesome. We love to hear it. Hopefully there's a turnaround for sure. AJ, is there any way that if people have questions, do you have like social media platforms they can reach out or email that you're happy or you're able to share if you'd like? It's up to you though.
Sure. You can definitely reach out to me on LinkedIn. I'm there constantly because that's
been probably what you do.
For the last 15 years for us. My email address, you can email me at aj@aljincorporated.com. Incorporated is spelled out, so I hope your spelling is good because you got to use it to get in touch with me. Ain't no ALJE, is ALJincorporated.com. And that, if you have interest in, you know, maybe doing the career strategy discussion with me, we can set something up that way as well.
Awesome. And I'll make sure to put that in the show notes. I'll copy and paste from our email. So listeners, all you have to do is copy and paste the incorporated, you don't have to spell it out. So I'll put it in the show notes for you. But thank you again, AJ. We really appreciate your time and your knowledge today.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed speaking to you.
You're welcome. And everyone listening, thank you so much for supporting us, for listening to the episode. We have, I don't even know how many, but we have a lot of career chats that we've already done. So if you are new here, please go back and listen to them. We have a wealth of knowledge from a lot of people in various fields. We'd love for you to go back and listen. If you've been hanging with us for a little while and you want to hear other careers or other professions, even if you're new here, please let us know what you want to hear from. Kemi and I are always happy to make connections so we can get people on the podcast to talk more with you all and just to connect you all with other people. So please feel free to email us. You know how to reach us through social media, but if you don't, it's Yasin Podcast on TikTok and Instagram. Yeah, we're excited for this year. We have some new things coming through the pipeline. So please stick around. We'd love to hear from you all. And thank you for listening, and we'll see you in the next one. See you.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in and listening to the latest episode of Your Advisors Will See You Now. Please make sure to follow us on all of our social media pages and check out our website. Take a look at the show notes below.
And please make sure to subscribe and share this podcast. Also, show us some love and please leave a 5-star review. Catch you next time.
See ya.